Hey guys, I just wanted to let you know that this podcast is presented by mybookie.ag and that if you use the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, that you will get a 50% deposit bonus on your first deposit. And given that you are a listener to this podcast, I would assume you're relatively knowledgeable about sports, and I would trust you to try your edge on the online sportsbook. You can lay down some money and get in on the action at one of the safest online sportsbooks in the world. It's the only one that I am currently using. You can wager on all sorts of different outcomes on mybookie.ag, soccer, football, any major league, esports. You can even create your own player props, which is useful for me because if you know anything about me, I do enjoy a good player prop. So if you deposit using the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, you get a 50% bonus when you deposit. And I will add this for listeners of the TakeCast. If you deposit using the promo code MATTEK and you send proof of it to me on Twitter, I will follow you on Twitter and you can have access to me via DMs whenever you want. That's the TakeCast bonus that I'm adding in association with the mybookie.ag deposit bonus. Now let's get back to the show. Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of the TakeCast. This is the bonus episode that you all earned for getting the show to 300 ratings on iTunes. Again, I mean, you guys know how much it matters. It's absolutely huge. It pushes the show up, gets more people's eyes on it. So this episode is done with Drew Dinkmeyer from DailyRoto.com talking about how to play NBA Daily Fantasy, kind of the way to get geared up for the season. Then we talked about some 2018 NBA storylines, some potential trades, some awards, and we got into showdown stuff towards the end and, you know, do defenses matter? All that good stuff. I think a really good show with Drew. Of course, if you want more content, if you want more stuff like this, go to patreon.com/takecast. The link is in the description. For $5 a month, you get at least one bonus episode per week. Honestly, I've been doing like three bonus episodes per week to get you guys to sign up, because I do think that it is a really unique opportunity that I have to provide you guys with more content. And of course, we're going to get right into the interview after this quick advertisement. Daily Roto is a mostly proud sponsor of the TakeCast, a mostly sports podcast. TakeCast listeners can save 10% at Daily Roto with the promo code JANIS, J-A-N-I-S. If you are playing on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto will help you improve your daily fantasy results this fall and save time in the process with lineup optimizers, ownership projections, fantasy projections, premium content, and much more. They have all the good stuff that you want to help you make money at sports betting and daily fantasy. Their new lineup optimizer will let you build optimal GPP teams with stacks based on their projections faster than I can punt money off betting on Peter Uihlein. Sure, you can play the guys that I recommend each week, but shouldn't you also get advice from a proven daily fantasy winner like Drew Dinkmeyer? Yes, I do have better hair than Drew, but I also have his cell phone number, and that makes me a winner almost as much as it makes him a winner of the DraftKings Millionaire Maker. And it's not just fantasy. They have tools to bet on player props, golf matchups, and a customizable NFL game simulator for this fall. Save 10% with promo code JANIS today. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the TakeCast. Another return guest, Drew Dinkmeyer. I don't actually know if you're the favorite returning guest or if Frisco Josh is. I think it's like, oh, and Mayo. But you guys are like the three returning guests that people are like, love those. Like, I get the best feedback from the episodes with you three.
Well, I mean, Frisco Josh doesn't matter. So it's
podcasts
either me
or Mayo. Podcasts don't matter.
Nothing matters. Eat Arby's.
Projections don't matter. Wide receivers don't matter. Jarvis Landry definitely doesn't matter.
No, that dude definitely does not matter. I need him to I saw that they play Tampa Bay next week, and I just decided I'm quitting DFS. Until I don't have to play Jarvis Landry anymore, then I'm quitting DFS.
You know who definitely doesn't matter? Is Maurice Harris. That guy doesn't matter at all.
That guy didn't matter. That was probably a thin cash play.
It was a little thin.
I noticed that you finished dead last in the Fantasy Labs Action Network Pentathlon.
I probably did.
I was not far off from you though.
I had a very bad week in DFS. That was the first NFL DFS slate that felt like an NBA DFS slate for me,
where it was like crazy right before lock.
The news was just crazy, and I did not process it well, and it has me rethinking about how much I'm playing on a given week between MME and single entry and cash games and different things like that. Cause with NBA, maybe my brain will get retrained for it, but I did not handle updating projections, getting that stuff out, trying to update all my 150 sets, trying to update my cash game lineups, trying to update my, you know, handmade GPP lineups. I just didn't handle it well yesterday.
Well, and every week you don't mash an NFL really feels like you're wasting your time, because we prepare for this stuff so hard and we spend 6 days getting ready for the next slate, and then you're like, oh, lost money. Like, yeah, it's like such insane negative ROI on your time.
It's a lost opportunity, because the kind of money you can make during NFL DFS is just very different than any other sport, because the prize pools are so big. So like, you hit 1 week in NFL DFS and you're set for the year. And so it's just every week that goes by that you didn't do that, you feel a little bit like a lost opportunity. And there's only like 20 weeks a year that you're playing NFL DFS. So it's a very different sport than the other sports from a DFS perspective.
Well, defense does matter in NBA DFS.
It does. I think it does. I mean, it's probably somewhat similar to some of the concepts that you talked about with Frisco, Josh, in terms of a lot of the things that matter being tied to pace of play as opposed to individual defensive skill. But yeah, defensive adjustments are positive in our models for NBA, for sure.
So the concept, the idea behind this podcast is, first of all, I told Drewby that we would do this podcast as part of sponsoring dailyrodeo.com. But I actually think it's really useful to do this and to have you on the podcast. I would assume most of the people that listen to this show are really into NFL. They're really into football. They play NFL DFS. They subscribe to, you know, whatever daily fantasy site of their choosing is. Hopefully someone who sponsors this podcast. And I think a lot of people are not nearly as good at NBA DFS though. Like, I think it's a much different skill set. And the idea behind having you on to come and do this is, it's not really a season preview so much. It's more of a how to get ready to not lose your ass playing NBA daily fantasy. And no one is better at it than you. I mean, I think you are easily regarded as one of like the five best NBA daily fantasy players. And I'm not going to ask you to comment on that, because you'll be way too humble about it. But you definitely are. So the first thing before we get into any of it is I want you to specifically talk about the Daily Roto product and how it applies to winning an NBA like immediately from tip off.
So I think the most important thing that is different from NBA DFS compared to all other sports is that because you have so many iterations of attempts in the NBA, because you have so many possessions per game and the players, there's only five players on the court at a given time, are getting so many opportunities that are condensed within a few players, projections are far more accurate in NBA than any other sport. They're more accurate than NFL. They're more accurate than MLB. And as a result, projections matter a lot more. So you need good projections as kind of a baseline for if you're playing NBA. I think in NFL, you can probably go a little bit more off field. Projections certainly, you know, help guide you in a direction. But I think in NFL and MLB, you can probably go a little bit more off field by just like looking at team totals and stuff like that, and trying to figure out stuff like that. NBA, it's not as much, it's more price sensitive because projections are so much more precise. That's a house phone that I have. I'm one of these people that...
Not only that, I need you to tell the people right now that you still use a travel agent.
I do use a travel agent.
This is... Drew's house phone is ringing right now, and he DM'd me after the Patreon mail podcast went up that he is one of the people that is keeping travel agencies in business. It was the most mind-blowing thing. Like, Drew is so smart. He's so sharp. But he can't be bothered to book his own vacations, I guess.
Yeah, so I do use a travel agent because there's a couple of things that a travel agent really helps with. One, they they're a little better off than like reading reviews of a site or whatever, because they have a little bit more personal experience in terms of people that have actually that use them, that have actually visited different places and whatnot. I use them for like big vacations. I don't use them to like book a flight to New York. I use them like every February, my wife and I go away around the All-Star break and we celebrate our wedding anniversary and we usually go somewhere big. So I use them for that. And so the other thing that they tend to do is they tend to get you discounted rates at hotels that almost pay for their fee off the bat. So like when we get, when my wife and I go on vacation, we will often like have a level of service that's a little bit higher than you would get without a travel agent. So we'll get like free bottles of champagne, like delivered to our room and different things like that. So yeah, they cost a little bit more than booking your normal travel. And I wouldn't use them from like, you know, a trip to Chicago or a trip to New York or whatever. But for like big vacations, we have used them.
So back to the Daily Roto product?
Yeah, back to the house phone that I have that just rings. Nobody talks on the house phone. We just have it so it can ring whenever a telemarketer.
When's the last time you answered it?
I don't know that I've ever answered that house phone.
Is this just something that Megan wants to have? Why have it?
I mean, it's a thing in Florida because it's like, oh, you know, if there's a hurricane and the cell towers go down or whatever, like, I don't know. But we have a house phone. All right, back to NBA. So NBA projections are a little bit more precise because you have more opportunities in a game for the top players. Like in NFL, you know, a top player might touch the ball 10 to 20 times a game. In the NBA, a top player is going to have the ball in their hands, you know, upwards of 60, 70 times a game. And then, you know, what they do with it will ultimately result in fantasy points. The other difference with NBA is the scoring is so iterative as opposed to big score events. So in NFL, you have touchdowns that drive a ton of the scoring. In MLB, you have home runs where the difference between a 400-foot fly ball that's caught at the warning track and one that scrapes over the wall is a huge difference in points. You don't have anything in NBA like that. I mean, a three-pointer is the most you can score on an individual point. And it's, you know, on DraftKings, it's 3.5 points. On FanDuel, it's 3. And a steal or a block is worth the same on FanDuel as that. So, like, you can easily overcome things where on the big play scoring events like MLB and NFL, you don't. So, as a result, things are just more precise. Price points matter a lot more. In NFL, you might not balk at a guy who's, you know, 5,400 when you think he should be 4,800. But in NBA, you might, because you just, everything's so much more precise. So how Daily Roto can help in terms of preparing you for NBA DFS is, one, we have projections available on our site. We have an optimizer and all that jazz. But our projections are updated all the time as far as news comes out. So like during the afternoon and news comes out, we update post-lock for those who are playing on late swap sites when news come out. We also provide email alerts. So when news breaks, we not only update our projections, but we send you an email with a note on what the news is, sourced with, like, you know, the beat writer Twitter account, so you can see it for yourself, and then what our analysis of the change is. And obviously, if it's really close to lock, there'll be less analysis. If it's, you know, an hour before lock, there'll be more analysis. But we kind of keep you updated throughout the course of the night, so you don't necessarily have to just sit at your desk and watch Twitter all day, or sit by your phone and have that. Just have like you know, notification set for emails from Daily Roto, and you'll get our alerts right to your phone all the time. We also have range of outcome projections this year, which is a cool thing that Mike's developed for all of our sports, and we have the ability to optimize based off of those.
I think you're kind of burying the lead with the alerts. That is easily the most important thing you could pay for when it comes to NBA DFS is good alerts that come with analysis. So like if you subscribe to like a Twitter feed that's like, okay, Ricky Rubio's out, well, great. But like if you're not sitting at your laptop, what are you supposed to do with that? Are you supposed to get on your phone and just swap out on your team's Ricky Rubio to Donovan Mitchell? Like it's not going to be a one-to-one like that. And the alerts really help people like me who I definitely want to play NBA on DraftKings this year, but I do not want to commit to sitting at my laptop from 6 to 10 o'clock at night because that's not why I play daily fantasy. I don't do it to grind out every 0.3% edge like you do. I do it because it's really fun. I really like sports, and it's more fun to be profitable than it is to lose. And the alerts are what I think is the best thing that exists about the Daily Roto product.
Yeah, I think it's extremely helpful because not every situation with an injury is exactly the same. Like you brought up a good one where Ricky Rubio, his backup point guard most nights in the past, has not really been DFS worthy because they just shift the ball into Donovan Mitchell's hands a ton. Whereas like Russell Westbrook this year, if he was ruled out, they have a backup point guard in Dennis Schroeder that would have the ball in his hands a ton. So every situation is a little bit different and a little bit nuanced in terms of who benefits more and how it changes the slate. And we try to provide that context along with the information in those alerts. But the range of outcome projections that Mike developed, I think it's really cool this year that within our optimizer, you can choose which percentile of the projections you want to optimize off of. So if you're playing GPP lineups, you can optimize off of a 75th percentile or 90th percentile projection instead of just a median projection or a mean projection that we have. So it allows you to maybe build in a little bit more of the higher variance players into your projection pools, whereas on cash games, you might want to be, you know, optimizing based off of mean or median projections. We also have customizability with all our projections. So if you don't agree with a minutes projection that we have or a usage rate baseline we have, or even a team total, if you think like Golden State's going to score 130 instead of 125 points on opening night, you can push up Golden State's team total and it would impact and push everybody's projections, which is also cool for like, if you do prop betting and any of those things, we have the outputs of what all our projections are so you can see. And we have prop betting tools that help highlight like where there's good values and good plays and stuff based on the prop betting side as well. So I feel like we have almost everything you could have. We have a lot of research tools as well that show advanced stats, that show how teams have been playing over time in terms of shifting pace or different things like that. So I feel like we have everything that you could have to make yourself a successful DFS player from a research perspective on the site. And then we provide it, you know, we supplement all that with content on a daily basis, Monday through Saturday. Any slates that are five games or more, we have a podcast and written notes that cover everything. On slates that fall below that, we have more extended alerts that kind of cover how to approach a strategy, how to think about a strategy. And in those in those analysis, you get a little bit more detail on kind of how I think through a slate and stuff that, you know, might not always be captured in projections or nuances to player projections. Like some guys that are coming in as a replacement, we feel really good that we know they're going to play 20 minutes. And sometimes it's like, we're not sure who's going to get the minutes here. So the projection's fragile.
Right. There's three guys who could be picking up minutes based on the matchup or whatever.
And so we try to add context to our projections within those, the analysis and the podcast to help everyone just be as prepared as they can for the slate.
So I think another thing that you should speak to is how Vegas stuff, like how player props and how, you know, lines affect things for NBA DFS. Because in NFL DFS, lines in particular, like, I mean, people, that's the first thing people look at.
Yeah.
You go team total, spread, and that influences like literally every decision you make based on game script. People check player props, like all sorts of stuff. And it does not work exactly that way one-to-one in NBA.
So the reason being is gets back to how the scoring of the two, the sports is different, right? Because touchdowns or in MLB, home runs and runs are so much more valuable than yards and the iterative stuff that overall scoring matters more in those sports than it does in NBA. Now, NBA games where there's really high totals often are the games that are playing the fastest, so you have more iterations to accrue points. But just points itself are not the majority of the way to score fantasy points. So as a result, you don't necessarily always want to attack the very highest total games on the slate. Sometimes the highest total games on the slate are with teams that have a bunch of very expensive players already because the pricing is accounting for the fact that these teams play very fast. So oftentimes there will be a slate where you might have like Houston playing Golden State and you'll get like a 230 total or something like that. And then you'll have like two bad Eastern Conference teams with like a 210 total. But those two bad Eastern Conference teams might be really thinned out by injuries. And as a result, a bunch of cheaper players are going to get a much bigger part of the pie. And that game might be more valuable from a DFS perspective because so much of the DFS scoring is not directly tied to points that are scored in the game. It is tied to pace, which can be somewhat representative in those totals overall, but it's not as directly correlated as, let's say, MLB.
I mean, you kind of like games where teams miss a lot of shots, though. Like, sloppy play is actually kind of good for NBA DFS, especially on FanDuel now, with like steals, like stocks are worth so much on FanDuel that actually, like, you know, like a disgusting, I don't even know who the two slowest teams would be now. Like an old Bulls Timberwolves game in like 2012 is like actually amazing.
Yeah, like Utah is going to be one of the slowest paced teams. They usually are. I'm looking at some of our pace stats from last year. Dallas was really slow last year. I expect they'll be faster this year with Luka in town. But yeah, in general, like, pace does matter in the sense that you want teams that play at a higher pace overall. But it does not always correlate directly one-to-one to overall totals in the game, because sometimes it's just two teams that are really, really efficient offensively and not necessarily two teams that just play super fast. So there is a lot of correlation there, but it's not as strong as it is in like the NFL or MLB in terms of where the majority of your fantasy points come from on a given slate.
So why don't you talk about, I guess, responding to the injury news, like stuff like right before lock, and not even in terms of the alerts, but just like how to like kind of mentally prepare for that?
Yeah, so that's the biggest difference in NBA than any of the other sports, is the fact that the slate can change entirely 15 minutes before the lock, and almost not all of the prep that you've done, but a lot of the prep you've done can be kind of wiped out completely. So most nights we'll have a pretty good idea of who's questionable. And in our podcast, in our alerts, we'll talk about the different scenarios if that player does not play, or if we're already assuming that player out, if the player kind of comes back in, what it would look like. And so we try to prepare you ahead of time. One of the things that you often should be doing in NBA, if you're using an optimizer, is you should be running different lineup sets based on different times and news. So I will often have like three or four lineup sets run by the time I'm settling in for alerts that are impacting different scenarios. And with our customizable projections, you can quickly do that. You can go to a team and filter off, like, if Memphis has Mike Conley questionable when we have him in our projections, you could take Mike Conley's minutes out and substitute them in for some backup on their team and figure out if that player is going to be a value. And I'll do that, and I'll run a couple different sets so I'm ready for NBA lock. I think that's the way a lot of the pros approach it. If you're playing casually and you're playing just one lineup, just keep in mind your idea of what could change on the slate. And then our projections are refreshed as quickly as we can once we get the news, and our alerts are there to update you as well, so you can quickly rerun things after you have that information.
So the most important thing, obviously, that I have to ask you about is how you contextualize narratives, because this is absolutely true that in NBA, players do have more control over their own usage, and on Twitter and in like free content that you take in, like if you're just like listening to like whatever free NBA daily fantasy podcast is there out there, and I'm not disparaging anyone, but you will absolutely get stuff like, Damian Lillard is playing in Oakland and his mom is there. Or LeBron said to the media last night, oh, you guys have no idea what I can do when I put my mind to it. Like, how is that? Is there any sort of that stuff that you filter in or would consider at all? Like, this is from Dinkbot.
Yeah, so I'm a robot, so I rarely do. There will be instances. And the other thing that I'd note is you have to be among the best players on the floor to be able to have that kind of impact, right? Like, Nick Young can't say like, oh, I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to dominate tomorrow night or whatever. And people aren't going to give him the ball and the opportunities to do that. LeBron or Damian Lillard, who
I
are
mean,
like...
Kevin Durant and Steph Curry lobbied pretty hard to get him to Golden State.
They did, but they didn't lobby for like, hey, let's get Nick Young 50 shots this game. So you have to be among the best players on your team to be able to exert, or highest usage players on your team to be able to exert more usage than you normally would for whatever the narrative is. I think there are occasional instances where there's milestones players are approaching that you might see them as like a dominant.
This is what the people need to know. In Kobe's last game.
I didn't play Kobe.
No way! No way, Drew.
It was a bad mistake. A very bad mistake. It was among the biggest mistakes of my DFS career.
Was that like a learning experience for you though? Like, did you like take something meaningful away from that?
Yeah, for sure. That like when a team has absolutely nothing to play for and a player has something in mind that they want to accomplish as a high usage player, they can probably do whatever they want on the floor to get those opportunities. And so, yeah, that was a mistake and one that I learned from. Now, I will say, I still think the number of times that you would have actionable information that you would
very low
adjustment is less than 5 over the course of a season.
Yeah. And there are definitely way more times where people have been swayed by a coach being like, oh, we need to get, you know, we got to get Bobby Portis more looks tonight or whatever. And the times people are swayed by that or make an adjustment in their projections because of that, you're going to get burnt on that more often than you will not.
Yeah. I mean, coach speak in all sports is difficult. Like, you need to learn which coaches are honest and which aren't. Like, we've seen with, you know, the Dolphins in the NFL, Adam Gase will say like every year he wants to play fast and they play at the slowest pace in the league. He'll say
Adam Gase just doesn't actually have any idea of how many plays an offense would run to be. Like, he doesn't have any conception of
that's possible. Or he'll say like Mike Gesicki is making all these improvements in practice and we don't see Mike Gesicki ever get any opportunities. So like you just have to learn over time that certain coaches can be trustworthy and others aren't. Certain teams are also better about letting you know injury information in advance than others are. Like, the Philadelphia 76ers have been great the last 3 years about getting information out day of, a few hours before the game, about the statuses of all their players. Whereas a team like Memphis that doesn't have super active beats has been very difficult to track over the years. So you just kind of learn that from playing DFS. And we try to get that across to our subscribers when we're covering dicey situations, that hey, like, we should get this information because generally this team is good about it, or hey, we might not, and we might have to make a guess here, and this is how we'd guess, but don't like try to slam the situation because we probably won't know.
So before we move on to you know, some more Bill Simmons like topics about the upcoming NBA season, what else do you think is important that people know if they make a decision like, okay, I'm going to play this year and I'm going to actually try and win and not just like dick around?
So I think we should talk about the two sites and their differences.
Yes, definitely.
Because they're very different games in terms of what you're playing. If you're playing on DraftKings this year, late swap is a big deal. It is a big edge to players who utilize it. And there's more ways than you probably think that it can be utilized. So the first way that most people think of late swap in general is just, hey, my guy's out, I need to replace them. That's the most basic way. That's the way most people who use it use it. There's another way to use it in the sense that you can build lineups in anticipation of news. So for me, like, I will often build lineups where if I think I have a good insight into a questionable situation that's going to happen later and it's going to open a lot of value later, I will build lineups that naturally leave me more spots open for late night roster construction so I can swap around my lineup. That's a way that I don't think everybody thinks through in terms of the way late swap can be used, but I will often have two players projected very similarly. One starts at 7 o'clock Eastern and one starts at 9 o'clock Eastern. And I will use the 9 o'clock Eastern player because I'm allowing myself more flexibility throughout the night for the odds of my lineup to improve based on news that other people wouldn't be able to react to. So I think that's a valuable way you can use late swap as well. The last way is contest specific, which is, and this is why playing late swap, at least in high stakes cash games last year playing DraftKings last year in high stakes cash games without late swap was very difficult, is because there's a lot of overlap in NBA. Most people know who the good plays are,
right?
And it's harder to fade the chalk because the chalk hits more frequently in NBA. So in cash games, you'll at times have tons of overlap, and you'll see in like a head-to-head or a 50-50, you have two spots left and somebody else has two spots left, and you're 25 points behind because you're one player that was different from them before got off to a really bad start. You should be looking at that contest and trying to reverse engineer if the people in it have the same players as you or not. And if they have different players than you, then it's okay to keep the players you have. But if they have the same players as you, you need to swap just to give yourself a chance. Even if they're lower projected players, they have a chance at least making up that ground. This is most frequently used in head-to-head contests, but it can be used in GPPs, it can be used in double-ups, 50-50, so on and so forth, that the people monitoring the status of their individual contest on a nightly basis can add value. Now, not like a person who's playing this professionally, like me, I can't even monitor every single contest, but I can have an idea with names that overlap with me and that play like all the contests, like Hoop, Empire Maker, CSU, so on and so forth. I can just compare myself to them in a couple, in one contest, and see where I'm at and see if I need to swap that whole lineup. But that's the third way to use late swap. And I think if you're playing on DraftKings, you should go in with the mentality that you should be trying to take advantage of late swap, because it is an edge that is on you know,
and other people won't use it.
No, very few people use it. So you will have a very high hit rate on giving yourself chances to overcome deficits in head-to-heads and different things like that.
And I mean, do you want to say your piece on the FanDuel?
Yeah, so FanDuel
8-9 thing.
Yeah, so FanDuel is a little bit different. So they are having lock, and I honestly, I'd rather have the two sites have different.
Yeah, it's actually great to have the two different products and let people pick and choose.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because some people like late swap, some people hate it, and I totally understand the people that hate it. Like last year, it was difficult for me because I didn't have anywhere to play because the late swap contests on both sites were so terrible. So it was like, all right, I'm not playing the game that I want to play. This year we have at least different types. So on FanDuel, what they've done to try to mitigate the effects of injuries is they've moved it to where you have 9 players, just like last year, but only the top 8 count. Now, I think this is a good way. This is the old like Victive way of scoring. And I think it's a fun way to do it, because you do mitigate that risk of a pure scratch where somebody at least has a chance. Because if you take a 0 in NBA, you got no chance. Everybody else is scoring. It's not like in the NFL where some weeks you might get a 6-for-50 from Julio. You're not getting 11 DraftKings points from Russell Westbrook on an individual game, ever. That will never happen. You're always getting like minimum 35-45. So as a result, you can't overcome zeros in NBA. So I think it does mitigate that risk of a pure zero, which is great. The challenge is, instead of going from 9 players to 10 and dropping one, they kept it at 9, and now you're playing an 8-man roster instead of a 9-man roster last year. So naturally, there's going to be more overlap because you've taken away a roster spot, one less decision to make. I also think most people will be smart enough to realize that if you just take a punt player, that allows you to have more salary to allocate to the other 8 spots that are more likely to score points for you. So as a result, I think builds are going to be very similar on FanDuel.
Do you think people will figure that out right away, though? And not even so much in the high stakes, but more in like, you know, just like kind of like the $5 double ups on FanDuel?
So I would say 75% of the people in those like $5 double ups will figure it out. There'll probably be still 25% that won't figure it out.
Yeah.
That are just like playing casually. They're just like, oh, I have 9 options to choose. Let me choose my 9 options. Mm-hmm. But what I think it will do is it will increase overlap. And what I think FanDuel needs to do is they need to raise the pricing on everybody, on all the stars.
Do you think that they will? Do you think
They have not so far. I don't know if they will. So like Russ was around 12.5K last year. He's 12.5K on opening night. Russ 12.5K for an 9-man 60K roster is different than Russ at 12.5K for an 8-man 56.5K roster. If everybody's just punting with like a min price player, right? So you have more dollars to spend per roster spot. So I'm hoping that FanDuel over the course of the season will raise the prices on guys, because otherwise we're going to have a lot of overlap. And in terms of ways to play it in GPPs, I think it's interesting. We have on our optimizer, we made it so that there's a 9th man feature where you can choose how much on a scale of 0 to 1, which is basically, you know, 0 to 100, what percentage of their projection you want to count
right
towards the overall projection. So you can weight it to like 1 would be I'm optimizing off 9 players. 0 would be I'm optimizing off 8 players. And what you'll get when you're optimizing off 8 players is that punt play that's coming in, that's just like the highest projected punt play at whatever position with the rest of the optimal. So I do think there's some advantage to like in GPPs trying to build a little bit more well-rounded rosters so that you're more likely to drop like a mid 20s score than a low 20s score or something like that. But it's going to be interesting to see how people play it in GPPs over the course of the season.
How do you think that the higher stakes GPPs, what do you think will be a more profitable strategy over the course of the year?
My early instinct is that playing a little bit more balanced will be more profitable, but more variable. I think everybody's going to play punt. And so when everybody plays punt, you have a lot of overlap on how people are going to play those lineups. And as a result, you being a little bit different, there's a little bit more value. Your lineups are going to be more unique. It's like kind of the same thing you have at times where in like golf, which is a highly variant sport. So it's a little bit different. It's more advantageous to be contrarian, but you'll get like guys that are like 20% in the Millie Maker, like owned like 45-50% in, you know, the club pro or whatever. Yeah. And in those situations, there's even more leverage to the play missing. In this case,
I mean, golf is like the number one sport where you could probably just win if you, even if you like didn't do projections and you just looked at ownership projections and just faded the hell out of them.
Generally, I think that's the way I try to play. I will not say it has been the most profitable or consistent strategy.
Well, if I'm going to ask someone from Daily Roto about how to be profitable in 2018, I'm asking Drewby. Drewby is
the guy. Yeah, that's the guy to ask. It's not me. I think there will be some benefit at least early in the season from just being different from the crowd, because I think what you'll get in some of these high stakes GPPs is you'll get a lot of duplicated lineups. And a lot of people will be like, oh, you know, that's people that are working together or sharing together. And maybe it is. Maybe it's people using same projections. But also, when you have fewer choices to make, you naturally get more condensed overlap and duplicated lineups. So I think that'll happen going from 9 players to 8 players, essentially, on FanDuel this year.
All right. Well, that's enough helpful advice. That's a good primer. If you're not interested in meaningless speculation about what's going to happen in the NBA over the next 6 months, and you just wanted to learn from Drew, you can tune out now. Drew, who wins the 2018-19 NBA championship?
So I think this is the last year the Warriors win.
Because you think Kevin Durant's going to New York?
I think that's a possibility, but I also think like this is a lot of basketball for these dudes to play over the last few seasons, and most of those guys are starting to get towards the aging curve where you start to
Durant's decline. The only one who's still on the right side of the aging curve, I think.
And Dre does not look as athletic as Dre looked a few years ago.
I think he just should like not play until the playoffs.
Save him for the postseason. I mean, that's the benefit that the Warriors have is they can do that stuff because they're so loaded that they can do that. I also think integrating DeMarcus Cousins is going to be more challenging than people think. Because I don't know that you can convince DeMarcus Cousins to just be the low usage center that just gets all the easy putbacks and whatnot. And every DeMarcus Cousins shot is almost inherently less valuable than any Steph Curry or Kevin Durant shot based on history.
Well, Cousins would never want to know this. And I don't even think the Warriors brass would ever admit this to him, but Cousins' whole value is in being the guy when Durant and Curry are on the bench.
Yeah.
Like that's why they want him.
And in not being on someone else's team. Like that's the other valuable thing about
for them. I never thought about it like that.
Having him on someone else's team, that because he's the type of guy that
they struggle
theoretically a little bit more vulnerable to because they don't have a llot of size at the center position.
Well, they have like 7 centers. I guess not anymore. I guess they've got down. Yeah,
they trimmed it down a lot this year, but they're going to play a lot of minutes with like Jordan Bell at center, and he's an undersized dude. I love Jordan Bell, and I think he's like a modern NBA center. But those big dudes who can grind on the post are going to wear those guys down over time.
Have you read Beta Ball?
I have not.
Pretty good Warriors book. I read it. And, I mean, you can read it in like 2 nights. And that is definitely the sort of thing.
Whose book is that? On that?
I believe his name is Eric Malinowski.
Okay.
Not Danny LaRue's book. LaRue's book is like 1,000 things Warriors fans need to know or something like that. But
Mark Thompson, I think is his name.
Warrior Scribe.
Yeah, and Sherwood Strauss, I thought, also had Warriors books. So
I do not think Sherwood Strauss has written a Warriors book, because if he did, I would have read it already.
Okay.
I might be the biggest Ethan Sherwood Strauss stan.
He's pretty hilarious.
He's like my favorite guy.
Yeah, he's a pretty good follow too on Twitter. He's got a pretty good perspective on things.
Yeah, he's great. What's
I think Golden State, this is the last year that I think they win the title.
I think it's the last year. I mean, it's, I don't think it's the last year if Durant stays. If Durant stays, I think they will continue to be the title favorites.
I think they would, but I think it's going to start to wear. And like they have to, if even if Durant stays, they have to make the decision on Clay as well.
Here's the thing. And I would actually be curious to see what you think of this, if, because it will come down to this money wise, probably Clay or Draymond at not Iguodala. Yeah. I have who I think the right answer is.
Oh man. So I think Clay is for sure going to age more gracefully and be the more valuable, on-court player, but I think there's an intangibles level that Dre brings that makes him more valuable to them than Clay.
No, it's totally Clay. It's like I think if you got Bob Myers and Lacob in a room and you'd had some drinks or whatever, I think they'd say Clay for sure. I don't even know if they would debate it.
I don't know. I think there's something to like, I forget who tweeted this. Maybe it was Nate Jones or somebody that tweeted basically like, if you look at every title team, they have someone like Dre on them that basically is the dude who keeps everybody in check and keeps everybody focused on what that end goal is. And if you go back to, I forget the line from Phil Jackson's books or whatever, but the disease of, or maybe it's Pat Riley's book.
That's you're wrong on both counts. It's Bill Walton, and it was in the Book of Basketball, and it's The Disease of More.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So maybe Phil just referenced it. It's on, I don't know. But those, I think you need those guys around. But I think Clay is definitely on the better side of like the aging curve for his skill set. Like shooting stays forever. What Dre does in terms of,
and he could actually even learn to dribble someday, maybe. Like, what
if Clay... he has in the preseason? Have you seen him?
No,
He's been initiating a little bit in the preseason.
Clay Thompson who could like dribble is like the most amazing player in the history. Like, imagine if he could have that quick shot that he has, like off of a step back. Like, just think about how damaging of a player that would be. It's unreal.
That's Steph Curry.
Basically. Like, but imagine having, okay, so imagine two of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, Steph Curry's broken offensive basketball paradigms.
He did actually change the sport forever. I think the three-point revolution would not be as popular with as many teams if Steph Curry was like a 38% three-point shooter. Not even that.
If his shots looked like J.J. Redick, it wouldn't be as fun. Like, it's the fact that he has so much pizzazz around his ability to create and then shoot and then so much swag with his shot.
First time in the history of the show that pizzazz has been dropped.
Yeah, that's an old person term. That's a very old person term. But yeah, he, like, the way he does things, I think, is inspiring to young people. That, like, a way that, like, J.J. Redick shoots that.
Yeah, kids do love Steph Curry. Robotic. What's the biggest trade that happens in the 2018-19 NBA season? And what teams are involved?
Biggest trade
that happens. This is basically asking, do the Lakers actually trade for someone good? Or do they just run with, like, Rondo and Lance Stephenson?
No, not during the season. I mean, what's the point at this point? You know what I mean? Like, they can just re-roster.
Well, what if Steph tweaks his knee again? And they're like, oh, well, maybe we can win.
I don't think so. I think that all the reconfiguring of the Lakers roster, I think, comes in the offseason. I mean, the biggest trade that'll happen is whenever Jimmy Butler gets moved. I don't know anything that'll be – Jimmy Butler is a borderline top 10 player in the league, guaranteed top 15 player in the league, and he's going to be traded at some point.
What if Tibbs just refuses to trade him?
It'll be hilarious. I mean, it's just going to be –
I don't actually understand why someone Jimmy's age would be like – you know who I really don't want to play with? Karl Anthony Towns. I actually totally get hating Wiggins and like not wanting to play with Wiggins. Like their quote unquote skill sets are redundant in the sense that Wiggins thinks he does well what Butler actually does well. But if you are Jimmy Butler, isn't Karl Anthony Towns like your perfect teammate?
From a basketball standpoint, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but what he just like hates that. He just likes to play Fortnite and that tilts Butler.
It might. I don't know. I mean, there's all sorts of rampant speculation on the Twitter machines about their relationship that I have no idea.
Which I could not be more here for. That's why the NBA is great.
No, that is why the NBA is great, because there's so many petty wars left and right. But I mean, Kat theoretically would be the type of big that you would want paired with Jimmy perfectly, because Jimmy's such a good perimeter defender that he can help overcome some of Kat's weaknesses in terms of defending the rim. And then Kat offensively, his ability to spread out and also be dominant on the post is something that you would want with Jimmy Butler. But Jimmy's he's a strange dude. He's like he's a little bit of a crazy person.
I think he's a lot bit of a crazy person.
Yeah. So he just has a different level of intensity that he requires from everyone else around him. And there has not been a stop at the NBA level that he has felt matched with that outside of when he was playing with the Bulls with Joakim Noah. I think that's the only guy. Joakim Noah, like Taj Gibson, those guys are like the only guys that I feel like he feels are on his level in terms of the intent that he puts in on a daily basis that he's played with. I'm sure there's other guys around the league.
What's the salary cap machination to get Butler to Houston or to Golden State?
That one I don't know. I've seen those rumors on Houston, and I really don't know how Daryl pulls that off.
I mean, because they got rid of the Ryan Anderson money's gone. It would have to be Eric Gordon's money.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Which would be crazy. I don't know. I mean, Jimmy and CP3 might be on that same crazy level. I don't know how Jimmy would deal with Harden. I don't know how that would work.
If someone's better at you at basketball, though, you probably have to like give them like you gotta bend the knee a little bit.
I don't know. I mean, do you think these guys have any idea who's better at them than basketball? Like, do you think they know the hierarchy well? In terms of who's better, I think most of these guys.
Jimmy Butler and James Harden. Harden probably knows the hierarchy. Butler probably.
I mean, if you are among the best, you probably know that you probably.
But like, I would say, like, I actually learned something from listening to like the Kevin Durant was on Damian Lillard's podcast, and basically, like, the guys who were like really, really good don't even view guys like CJ, or it was actually CJ McCollum. Like, the Warriors don't even view the Blazers as competition.
No, not at all.
Like, they the way Durant was talking, he was like, it was like almost like the Blazers play in a different league. Like, he was just like, oh, yeah, it's nice that you guys were like, you know, you had a good season or whatever. And he like didn't even know the Blazers' actual record. Like, didn't know. Like, it was really funny.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, there's nothing but truth in that sentiment either, that the Blazers just are on a different level. I mean, most of the NBA is on a different level than Golden State.
Durant is like the most millennial NBA player ever, by the way. He's like the most like phone addicted, like bad attention span, really moody. Like, he's like the true first millennial superstar athlete or NBA player, I guess.
That's why all these rumors of him going to New York are fascinating to me, because I don't know that he has the mentality to handle what would come upon him as the lead guy at Madison Square Garden for a team that hasn't had that guy. I mean, they kind of tried to fake it with Melo, but haven't had that guy in decades.
Don't you think that at least for like the first year and a half, regardless of the win-loss record, it would just be such a honeymoon that it'd be worth it for him?
I think probably the first year. I don't know if beyond that. I don't know. The expectations, if you're a good team in the East, are so high right off the bat because there's not a lot of challengers, which is silly because there's a huge hierarchy in the East right now where, like, Boston should be, like, a meaningful step ahead of Toronto and Philly and whoever else you want to
play. Kind of think I'm buying into this Toronto team. Kind of like what they – kind of like everything that they have going on there.
I mean, they're just – they're a really sharp organization. So as long as Kawhi is healthy and playing, they will be exceptionally good.
Someone who I think makes sense is someone that could get traded away if the organization is really as forward-thinking as they pretend to be is Lowry. 32-year-old, 33-year-old point guard with, like, knee stuff in the past, who's making a lot of money and who other teams value way higher than his actual value is.
So that's the if Kawhi is hurt or moody or whatever and not playing. Yeah, I think he probably would get moved.
Do you think Kawhi is a Laker next year?
I don't understand what's going on with this Kawhi situation. Like, it just seems very strange to me. I don't know what he wants to do. Like, I can't really figure it out, because he had the clear path to either LA team if he wanted it this year. So I don't know. I think some people are assuming that he's sharp enough to realize, like, don't do the Carmelo Anthony thing, which is like force yourself a trade a year early and deplete the team you're going to from all the assets that they have. So then you have nothing to work with. But I don't know. I mean, he was in a great situation, you know, from the outside looking in San Antonio, where he could be the featured guy and they were a competitive team and he had a great coach and a great front office. So I really have no idea what the dude's priorities are. That's going to be fascinating next year to follow.
NBA free agency is better than the actual NBA regular season. I stand by that. It's the second best sports season in the world.
I think so. The NBA has become soap operas for men.
True. Basically.
I mean, it's just all year long with the pettiness, with the trade rumors, with
the NFL only wishes that it had anything like this.
I mean, the NFL is still crushing, man. They made the rules changes, scoring's up.
Oh, and now how good are the rules changes?
Like, so good.
And
so
like, good. I watch the games now, and I just like, every game is just great to watch. Even the bad games are fun.
I don't feel guilty as often anymore, which was the big thing the last 3 years. When I would watch on a Sunday, I would have two or three hits a day where I'd be like, ugh, I don't know what I'm watching anymore. Like, that guy's life is now severely impacted, and I'm sitting here watching, you know, the Shazier moment and stuff like that. You just don't see that as often anymore. And you see more open play and more scoring, and you see the athletes get to be the athletes, and it's way better now.
They are still a bunch of hypocrites, though, until Colin Kaepernick gets a job or until he wins the lawsuit. Still anti-league office until Kaepernick.
Yeah, I mean,
I think
it's a good bet to, in general, be anti league offense, league offices, anti-billionaires in general.
Yeah, definitely. I'm definitely team anti-billionaires. Giannis, 5-1 to win the MVP. How much are you on board of the Giannis season?
Like, it's not good. You never get good odds on these guys, but he's going to be unbelievable. I think in general, if you want to bet for, like, if you then you need a narrative around an MVP story along with the really good play. And I think
the honest narrative is good.
The honest narrative is very good for a couple of reasons. One, I think the roster is much improved. I think Brook Lopez adds a lot to their team. And the things Brook Lopez does not do well are not as big of a deal with them. So it's a very good fit. It gives him a lot of space to drive. And Giannis is just going to be at the rim all year long. Additionally, that was a huge coaching upgrade going from Jason Kidd to Mike Budenholzer. You're just going to get a better offense. You're going to get a better defense. You're going to get the players used more optimally. And as a result, you have a chance for that team to really raise up to the level of the Toronto, Philadelphia, Boston in the Eastern Conference. So the narrative around Giannis for the MVP, I think, is very strong. I think for me, it's probably him or Anthony Davis. I think Anthony Davis could have a year where the numbers are just insane because they are playing so fast and they are playing him at center. And at center, he's got more opportunity to create bigger numbers because you'll have more rebounds. You'll have more blocks kind of defending the paint. And he has a chance to shoot 60%+ with how awesome
What if they are like the 7 seed though?
No, he couldn't win it. They'd need to get up to...
Well, he'd have to average a triple-double.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, history has totally relitigated that, and everyone's like, well, Harden was the clear winner. And you know what? Let me say, Russell Westbrook sweat for that MVP. He deserves it. I feel no shame for touting Westbrook for MVP that year.
He did. It's similar to the way that I feel about Derrick Rose's MVP. Like, clearly was not the best, most valuable player in the league.
But like, also, it's more fun to give like one MVP to a bunch of guys than give LeBron 12 MVPs. Like, I'm, even though LeBron has kind of deserved it every year for various reasons, like,
yeah, MJ got treated the same way.
Yeah, what's the harm in giving Harden one? What's the harm in giving AD one? What's the harm in giving Durant one?
You're talking about these MVP trophies like their participation awards.
Yeah. I mean, listen, the entire NBA is participation trophies right now. Well, the Warriors are this good. They're bringing DeMarcus Cousins off the bench. Like, it's just, this is the most ridiculous collection of talent. Like, I had kind of forgotten how absolutely absurd it was that they added Kevin Durant to a team that just broke the NBA record for wins. Like, It was just so absurd.
They're absurd and they're amazing, but there are some teams that I think the way that they've built could make a series of series much more interesting than we've ever seen before with Golden State in terms of the road that they would have to get through. I mean, the idea that they would have to get through possibly in a scenario, a LeBron team, that Houston team that gave them challenges last year, and then in the East, one of like a Boston, a Toronto, maybe a Philly. A Philly can kind of take that next step forward. Those teams, the way that their rosters are structured, are very interesting to challenge Golden State, especially Boston. Boston is going to be fascinating. And I hate, like, Boston Celtics Twitter is awful.
Oh, they're some of the worst people in the world.
I hate it so much.
Really, but Boston Twitter in general.
But it's very difficult to not like that team. Like, they are built in a very smart, structural way. They're deep. They have a lot of different ways they can match up with you. They have fully supported the star that they brought in Kyrie Irving with a team full of strong defenders around him that accentuates his skill set. It's like, it's just a really well-built team that's going to be really fun to watch because they can play lots of different ways because they have so much wing depth.
What if they're just not good enough on offense though?
I mean, that's where
it's like a real thing. Like,
that's where it comes down to the Kyrie and the playoff stuff. If you believe his isolation ability, just kind of trumps.
I think that, I mean, don't you think that's kind of more than proven? Like, I think the ability to get shots out of isolation sets and create your own shot, I don't even know if it's worth conjecturing anymore. Like, that's a huge
thing. There's an extra value that it adds during the postseason that I think is not a value that is added during the regular season.
You just hate Nick Young and J.R. Smith. And it's like, you just, like, those honestly,
guys, those guys create bad shots.
In your heart of hearts, you view Kyrie Irving as just like an advanced version of J.R. Smith.
No. Kyrie's on a totally different world in terms of his handle and his ability to get to the rim on those guys.
I mean, fair enough. Do you think the Cavs, like, do you think they try and like spite themselves and like trade a first round pick for a veteran just to like get the eighth seed just so that Dan Gilbert can be like, look, we didn't fall apart without LeBron?
I hope not. I mean, they're a weird team. Like, JR is not even going to be in the rotation because they have a lot of wings that they feel like they have to play to like get looks at, to evaluate value. So they're a weird team, but it ultimately just comes down to, can Kevin Love's body handle a, you know, 82.
Spoiler alert. No,
it probably can't.
He can't.
I mean, the good news is he won't be playing as much center this year. He'll be playing a lot more power forward. So he won't have to defend all those huge monsters centers down low. But I mean, his body's failed in the last few years. So handling that type of usage, I don't think they'll bump his minutes up substantially. I would guess he'd still be 30 to 31 instead. If they try to play him back like Minnesota minutes, like 36.
Oh my God. Like, Minnesota Kevin Love was just like, if you're new to NBA Daily Fantasy, my God, Minnesota Kevin Love was just something else.
It was, I'm trying to think of like who a good comp would be, but there's not.
I mean, not in terms of like style, but like very similar to King's Boogie. Like in terms of points.
Yeah, like 25 and 14 with like 4 assists.
But like Love was like getting 3-point bonuses too.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Boogie last year, I guess.
Yeah.
Before he got hurt. Yeah. Yeah.
Have you looked at any of these totals? Do you like any of them?
I haven't looked hard at them, but I would say I saw somebody.
I'll throw out a couple to you.
I saw Toronto was like low 50s, which seems crazy to me.
The Raptors on Bovada are 55.5.
Yeah, that's a better number, but I would in general, like if Kawhi's healthy, they're going to win 60 probably. So it just comes down to if Kawhi's healthy. I mean, their bench is really good. And the key to like, I think the key to evaluating NBA season win totals is really evaluating the depth of the team, and teams that have really, really good benches are teams that are likely to outperform. That was like kind of the Pacers deal last year. Not only that Oladipo took a really big step forward, but that they had like 8 quality NBA players.
Yeah. They weren't throwing out like Shelvin Mack or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Which is why like Utah always has a good 10th, 11th guy that like you've never heard of. Like Royce O'Neal last year just came out of nowhere, and that dude can play. Like Utah is a really good organization for that as well. They just have the challenges of being in the West.
Here's an interesting one. The Hawks, who are openly and defiantly tanking, like they don't care at all, and they are actually incentivized to lose. 23.5. What would you take?
That's a really low number.
That's a that is a the under on 23.5 is a Bill Simmons Gold Star lock.
Yeah, that's a real. That's just a really low number in general. I'm trying to see. I'm trying to look at how many teams last year actually won less than that, because there's just not many. Are they going to be?
I'm sure that's just very not common.
Yeah, like that's when those. I mean, when the Sixers were tanking, they were winning in the teens. So like last
confirmed.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think that's a good number. I would say if I had to, I'd bet on the under, just because their best player, in my opinion, is going to be John Collins this season. And he's very deep cut.
What a deep cut, Drew.
Why? Who am I missing?
Trae Young. The franchise hopes it's Trae Young. I think nerd Twitter would say Bazemore.
No. No, nerd Twitter would probably say Taurean Prince.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, they do. They like that guy.
But yeah, I don't. They don't have a lot of depth. So I would say, gun to my head, I'd take the under. But I think that number's right.
I have an under that seems pretty easy.
What's that?
Warriors 62.5. Don't you feel like they're like, all right, let's win 58 and call it a day.
Yeah, I think it's for sure.
I have that one booked already.
They're a team that doesn't have a lot of depth. And I mean, they can't, like, when KD like sits out his games or whatever, they can't run Iguodala out there for 30 plus. Like, it's gonna take a toll.
Who's the guy this year that is gonna be soaking up those minutes? I need to look at their depth chart.
In terms of like when KD sits? I mean, Quinn Cook's gonna play a lot.
Just like the guy that there's always a guy on the last 2 years with them not caring as much.
Well, they're screwed up by this Patrick McCaw situation where he like refuses to sign the tender and thus like is just not gonna play. So unless they get him, they're really thin.
Who's gonna be playing like way more than anyone expects? Is Looney. Looney's going to play a ton.
Well, especially early in the season when DeMarcus isn't available. I think Looney's going to be playing like low 20s a night.
They still have six guys on their roster who they're going to play at center.
They just don't have as much depth to handle the injury stuff as they did in the past, because the guys who were behind them that could soak up those extra minutes are really old now with Iguodala and Livingston.
And they don't have, like, David West is not coming off the bench for them anymore. It's a little bit different.
They need to protect those guys just as much, not as much as the starters, but they're
like locks to get to buyout guys though.
Yeah, they'll get somebody to have depth. But for the season total, I agree that's I'd rather be on the underside of that bet for sure.
The Lakers also fascinating, 48.5. I think that's like such a Rorschach test.
Feels too high.
Yeah, but how can you take the under on a LeBron team? Especially at under 50s, it's just crazy.
Well, I mean, the past few years, unders on LeBron teams have printed because the Cavs had no depth. The good thing is the Lakers have some depth. It's just also crazy.
The Lakers roster is just like an insane Pablo Picasso painting.
If you tell me like Luke Walton, the other problem is Luke Walton is a dude who likes to play a lot of guys. So
he's getting Moritz Wagner in there 8 minutes a night,
because he was a bench guy in his career. So he like feels like it's better for everybody to be involved. If they were just playing like Lonzo, KCP, Hart, Ingram, LeBron, Kuzma, like those six guys a ton, I would say that I'd feel pretty good about them approaching 50 wins and being worth that number. My concern is that they're going to play Lance Stevenson and Rondo and Beasley and as a result, they're going to spread out some of the minutes from the good players and that depth is going to be questionable. But I like their main six guys a lot. I just don't like the depth behind them very much.
I think that this dude Svi Mykhailiuk, the KU guy, he will be a guy who's like 3,700 at shooting guard on FanDuel who becomes a play like a lot.
Very possible.
I think he like fits the mold of a guy who like would want it, who LeBron would like to play with, because he does not demand the ball at all, and he'll
just spot up shoot. Yeah. That's the other thing, that like LeBron is best with a bunch of dudes who just spot up shoot. And not that LeBron can't mold to play whatever way LeBron wants to play, but there's not a lot of spot up shooters on the team. There's KCP, there's Kuzma. I think Hart can do it, but that's not the role he's been asked to do. And so it'll be interesting to see. But I would lean towards the under on there.
Bucks, 48.5. No, just 48. Just 48, actually.
Yeah, so that's 4 wins ahead of what they did last year. So I think I would be on the overside, but I don't love it. But yeah, I think I'd be right around the overside. I think that's a fairly good line. I do think the coach improvement is a big deal, and I think their depth is much, much improved this year over last year. Like last year, they were running out like Jason Terry for minutes, and that, you know, that's not going to have to happen anymore. So yeah, I would lean towards the over on that side. I think the Bucks to win the division, I think they're like even money or +110 or something like that over. Basically, it's just a straight bet with them versus Indiana, because I don't think anybody else is really in play in that division. I think is a good bet too, because I like them a little bit more than Indiana this year, even though I think Indiana's pretty good. I think there's just going to be a little bit of natural regression on some of their guys from last year.
53.5 for the 76ers also seems like, just seems high.
It does seem high, especially, I mean, the question is still like, how much can you trust Embiid's health? Like we got away with a year from it, but I don't know. Like, I mean, they didn't even win 53 last year.
But what if Embiid is what he's just like ready to go? Like what if he's just like, look, man, I'm golden.
Yeah, and I can play like 34 minutes a night.
And he just averages like 28 points, like 3.5 blocks. And
yeah, then he's got legit MVP candidate to him. But I don't know. I would say that looks a little high to me, the fact that they didn't even win that many last year. And you would expect, I don't think the East is that much worse than where it was last year. I mean, obviously the Cavs are a lot worse, but I don't, you know, most of the other teams, I don't think they got worse. So
this Oklahoma City roster, man,
it's not pretty.
I'm looking at their wing rotation and I'm like, man, Abdel Nader's going to have to get some minutes early here in the season.
It's not pretty. The thing that they struggle with is not only is their wing rotation not very deep, but their rotation at the four is challenging to count on a lot of minutes with Jeremy.
Well, no, they're just going to play Paul George there more.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they have to. But then that thins out, that leads into the challenges of the depth rotation, unless they're going to play Schroeder and Westbrook together a decent bit.
Oh, they will. This is an organizational thing for the Thunder for years now, of just being like, whoever the fifth guy is that can play with these other four guys, and the like, it just doesn't grind to a screeching halt. Like Derek Fisher, man, Derek Fisher, like 42 years old in their game 7 of the Western Conference Finals.
The difference is between like Derek Fisher and Raymond Felton is those guys are like happy to just like stand and occasionally bring the ball up when they need to. I don't know if Schroeder's got that mentality. So it'll be interesting to see.
I hope Schroeder's good enough for them to trade him for someone who can shoot.
Shooters don't often get traded these days. It's just like,
I might like Isaiah Cannon better than Dennis Schroeder for this team.
Oh, no, get out of here. That's ridiculous.
You hate that guy.
He's terrible. He can't defend. He's a spot up shooter in a point guard's body that can't defend. He's like a really bad version of Patty Mills.
Okay, there we go. This is a good place to end the podcast. Spurs win total is 43.5.
Oh my god.
I mean, everything about their roster screams 37 win team.
And it's gotten so much worse in the preseason with losing.
Well, their total has fallen, I think, 5 wins since it
opened. Yeah, I mean, I think I was really high on DeJounte Murray, so I mean that is a terrible blow, and I don't know, but when is the last time Pop hasn't scratched out 45 wins?
Let me throw out a theory for you that's making the rounds right now. Does Pop even like have the emotions and like the wherewithal to give it and do it every night after like all this tragedy in his personal life? Like that's a real not that I know that's hard to ask Dinkbot.
No, so I mean I don't think his I don't think his added value is based off of like his energy or his intent. I think it's in the structure that they've set up with the depth of resources that they have on the coaching staff, with the way they play in general, which leverages a lot of small advantages in terms of the rules with like those dribble handoff into, which more teams are leveraging now, but those dribble handoff where you kind of like rotate the screen slightly and almost every screen is a moving screen, but you just see how often they'll call it. And then the fact that they just teach guys not to chase blocks and just be positional defenders. And like, I think their system is most of the value, which has been set up by Pop, as opposed to like him making in-game adjustments and stuff. I actually don't think he's that great at that stuff. I don't think he's on Stevens' level in any of that stuff, but I think the system they've set up is so strong that it leverages everything. So I don't think anything from his personal life would have any impact on the strength of the system.
I mean, is the system as strong with the roster this much in flux, though, I guess is the question.
I don't know. This is so many long twos. This team is so many long twos. I don't know.
I mean, their backcourt is Mills. Like, their best lineup is Mills, DeRozan, Bellinelli, Gay. Aldridge, Gasol.
Maybe Gay.
Oh, I don't put Gay in their best lineup, I think.
I don't know, man. I
mean, does Gay take more threes now?
Not really, but yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'd probably say under, but
man. My God, dude, this is a bad basketball team.
It is not a good roster.
Quincy Pondexter is playing real minutes for this team this year.
It is not a good roster. I mean, they needed DeJounte to take a leap and be a creator that could get to the rim kind of at will. And then that frees up the lack of space that they have from just having all these dudes who shoot twos. And now that they don't have that, and they're going to run, you know, Derek White, who then got hurt. So now it's going to be like Bryn Forbes at point guard. It's just going to be, it's going to be bad.
Do you have a breakout guy, not named Giannis Antetokounmpo? Do you have a good breakout candidate for someone to watch or the people to watch early on?
Let me scroll through rosters here quickly and kind of look at somebody. I have not watched as much preseason as I usually do. So usually I can pick up something in preseason where a guy just looks like he's able to get to the basket at a bit different rate. Like one preseason, I was like, Jimmy Butler looks like Kobe this year, like with how easily he's getting to the basket. And that was Jimmy's first big year. So you're talking about like an already good player becoming like a star type player, right?
or just a guy who's like, you know, he's kind of on the periphery, and then he's going to go from that to being considered nightly in DFS.
I mean, it's just natural growth, but Luka is going to be unbelievable to watch this year.
What if he's not though? What if he's too slow, man?
Dude, he's James Harden's skill set. He has James Harden's skill level with handle and with shooting, and James Harden's not fast. You don't have to be like.
Listen, I'm a Doncic stan. I like him, but that's the criticism.
It has not shown up at all in the preseason. He's gonna be a joy to watch this year. I was kind of hoping Simmons, but like Simmons is backing off the ideas that he's gonna shoot much. But I was really hoping he had developed that shot to a decent level, because he's just such a freak in his ability to control the game at his age. It kind of like a. Kind of a LeBron fashion, but he has no shot whatsoever. Tatum's development will be really interesting this year, just because
I'm big on that, to see like what if Tatum's just better than Gordon Hayward.
Yeah,
That's a problem for the. That's like you would think that would be a good thing for the Celtics. That's actually probably a problem for.
That's the thing that I'm most interested in seeing, is just if his development gets curtailed at all, because he was really asked to take on so much last year, and he. Basically answered every question, and he was a guy I was not high on in the draft. I was very wrong on, but he's a guy that among the players' development I'm kind of most interested in seeing this year, because there's just so much more competition for shots with Kyrie and Hayward back.
There we go. Want to talk about the Daily Roto product one more time before we get out of here?
Yeah, so if you're going to play NBA DFS this year, check us out over at dailyroto.com. We've got projections, we've got range of outcome projections. We've got advanced stats tools to help you do your research. We've got email alerts that'll keep you updated throughout the day and into the night on all the injury information, as well as how that changes the landscape of the slate. You've got myself contributing. You've got Mike Leone contributing. You've got Ricky Sanders contributing. Chris Pacheco contributing. Scott Mallywig contributing this year as well. So we've got a really well built out roster of talent that we're really excited to be able to leverage and take care of all your NBA DFS needs this year. So drop that promo code, Matic.
Promo code Janis, J-A-N-I-S. Go and get it 10% off on Daily Roto, and you're not getting that 10% off just normally. They don't give that to everyone. This is a special TakeCast exclusive.
That's right.
We'll close with this. It's a great way to engage with the NBA. If this podcast got you excited, if you were like, oh man, I am excited to track all this stuff. I'm excited to watch Cousins. I'm excited to watch the Warriors. I'm excited to watch the Celtics. NBA DFS is a great way to engage with the product in a way that keeps you interested and motivated night by night.
It keeps our Slack chat hopping too, which is one thing I didn't mention as well. But if you're a subscriber, you get access to our Slack chat where you can pester me with your 1v1 questions that I'll tilt my face off at, or you can just watch the NBA and tilt with everybody or celebrate with everybody in there on a nightly basis.
You could also pester me. I'm in there. I really only go in there to talk CFL and golf, though, if I'm going to be completely honest. I do monitor. I monitor on Sunday mornings to see if you say anything particularly valuable. Most of the time, it's mostly just people.
Sunday mornings are not a great time to find me in there.
No.
The better times to find me in there are the light build times. But I'm usually in there, I would say, I don't know, hour or two a day, kind of answering questions or talking through strategy and stuff.
There you go. That's it. DailyRoto.com, promo code Janis. The TakeCast, rate and review it on iTunes. Listen to it on Patreon if you want to. I've been doing these showdown analysis, and I mean, I don't want to pound my own chest or anything, but I'm going to, because on the podcast I said the easy captain play was Tyreek, and that was pretty good advice. So if you want,
I told our subscribers to make sure they have max one kicker per lineup in a GPP, because there's not enough upside in a game that might score 80 for two kickers to win.
Well, hey, actually,
two kickers won everywhere, so I'm a real sharp guy.
We should actually just talk about this anyways. The people won't care if we're not actually done. I decided today that I think on the insanely high totals, like the 60 totals, the 59 totals, I actually think the kickers are super in play. The games you don't want them are like the 52 point totals, because that's basically saying it's going to be a high scoring game by NFL's normal means. But in these games, we're like, there was one punt last night. No, and so if these games are going to be that high scoring, a kicker can get 15, no problem.
That's so I agree with you on one sense. The thing that I would stress is, especially with respect to DraftKings, you have to think in the context of how many plays are going to be receptions. And so the way the Patriots played last night was very favorable for kickers, because they ran the ball a lot and scored the ball a lot. And the way the Chiefs play can often be a little bit more favorable to kickers, because the Chiefs have so many explosive plays that drives end quickly. But if you expect a team like Green Bay or New England normally to just complete 30 passes, kickers are going to have a hard time keeping up. Because there's going to be a couple guys who just rack up, you know, 5 for 60s, that most nights it's tougher for a kicker to get 11. So from a GPP perspective, I thought I usually play max one. Last night it didn't work out because there were 9 field goals. But I also thought both teams would play more aggressively naturally and try to convert more fourth and shorts and different things like that, because they know the skill of their offense. But it didn't work that way. Both teams ended up kicking field goals a lot.
Another issue is it is pretty slate dependent, because you have to look at the guys who are less expensive than the kickers and say, okay, like in a jet, like just say theoretically, if it was a team that carries like 4 tight ends, and so they have like a bunch of tight ends down there, and then, you know, the fourth string running back and the fullback, not particularly valuable. But when it is like, I think part of the reason one kicker max made sense before lineups locked was the Patriots and the Chiefs both use guys way down their roster. And I didn't hear anyone talking about this, but DeAnthony Thomas being out should have changed the way you projected the Chiefs offense a little bit, not in terms of targets and touches, but in terms of snaps, because that was like 30 snaps a game that they were needing to replace. Thomas is out there a lot just to move and drag defenders.
Yeah, very slightly. And I think it's like probably one gadget play per game that was probably more likely to go to Tyreek now than DeAnthony, which kind of helped there. But what I would say is, in general, and this also backfired on me on the Minnesota Rams game, but in general, really condensed offenses, the really cheap guys are going to be less viable, and thus the kicker is more valuable. So I thought that on that Minnesota Rams slate, and then Aldrick Robinson caught two touchdowns on his two targets.
Well, I mean, and part of that is just showdown run bad, and you're like, there's nothing to learn from that.
And it broke the slate. But in general, those teams that have condensed offenses with really expensive skill players, the kickers are going to be more valuable.
Yeah, I'm still sticking to my theory that, like, the massive totals, like when the Chiefs and Rams play later this year, the kickers in that game, like whoever it is for the Rams, like they have, like, they've,
well, I think the Chiefs are going to be problematic just because they're so bad at defending the run that they're going to lower the number of receptions.
Oh, defenses don't matter.
That they're going to lower the number of receptions that that opposing teams have, which is what I thought we saw last night with New England. So that would be my concern.
Do you want to give a defenses don't matter take real quick? Sure. Actually, let's just get it all. You haven't been on the podcast in like a month and a half. Let's just get it all out.
So I think the majority of the sentiment of Josh's take is correct. I think there's been a proliferation in the DFS content space around matchups like wide receiver, cornerback, and all this stuff. And it's information that the mass public enjoys. And it's information that is easier to sell to customers than, hey, I'm just projecting this guy for 25% market share of the targets and his team's going to run 62 plays and they're going to be 40 pass plays. And so that's how we get at this 10 target projection. Like, nobody likes to hear that as how you talk about projections, but people will like to hear they're playing this defense that ranks this in DVOA or has allowed this many points to the wide receiver position. And so people feel more connected to the idea that they're playing against a bad defense. So I agree with the majority of his sentiment. The idea that it makes absolutely zero difference, I think, is an argument of semantics with his threshold being high for statistical significance. And so,
well, yes, he said that on the podcast. Right. He basically said, yes, there is some signal if you do this, this, and this, but yes, it's not enough for me.
So our projections, we've back tested with assuming everybody neutral and assuming our baseline tweaks based on YPA allowed and different things like that. And his point is, on a week-to-week basis, it is exceptionally noisy. And that is accurate. That is 100% accurate. It's also very noisy to project plays. All this stuff in football is very noisy and very difficult to project accurately. So all of his points there resonate strongly with me. But we have had more success when we layer in defensive quality into our projections than when we assume nothing altogether. So we believe it makes some impact, but way less than the general public assumes that it makes. And one of the challenges, and I tell this to people in our Slack all the time, is we just got to say stuff when we're on all these pods. So, like, you just have to fill
it. Like, that's like a huge – people have no idea how much content is literally just like, we got a 45-minute show to do, and I can't just say – Emmanuel Sanders is going to get 7 targets, and so for that,
people don't find that interesting.
Yeah, you got to talk about the matchup and the cornerback and the DVOA and like all that, and like none of it's that helpful.
It's the same thing with screenshots, right? Like, I would love to never do screenshots because I really don't care for them at all. But man, people respond to that, and it works for marketing purposes. So to be able to sell the business, we have to do that, and then we get people in and we try to manage expectations and basically tell people, like, yeah, the goal here is to try to hit every once in a while.
The You're goal is hella screenshots.
Yeah. So, but it's like the same thing where you have to, like, there's some things you have to do because that's what the consumer wants. And if you don't do them, you won't have consumers and you won't have a business because people don't respond to it. So it's like the same thing where you have to talk about matchups and you have to like talk through game scripts and things like that when
Josh said basically like game script does matter, like projecting the other offense is actually important to projecting.
So what he's talking about is pace of play.
Yeah.
So what I would consider slightly different than game script, what I would consider game script would be more along the lines of like who's playing from ahead, who's playing from behind type thing. But yeah, so you just have, there's so many things that people respond to better, that's a better customer experience for them, that you talk about, and then you know in your projections you don't necessarily weight as heavily as they're thinking you weight. So I would say I agree with like 95% of his take on the whole. But I think his threshold for what matters is higher than what I am willing to accept in terms of what makes our projections better.
DailyRoto.com. If you want more educated and nuanced takes from Drew, who just covered all of those topics with me, DailyRoto.com, promo code Janice, Patreon for TakeCast, rate and review on iTunes. Thank you all for listening.